7 out of 10 proctologists recommend listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
Well, folks, I am looking forward to this next guest for a couple of reasons. Number one, we had him on the line a couple of weeks ago. We had him. It's like getting a big fish that close to the boat and then psh, gone, broke away.
The one that got away.
But he's back like a recurring nightmare. J.R. Martinez, you know him as winner of Dancing with the Stars. You know him from All My Children. You know him as an author, motivational speaker. We're going to get to know him a little better right now on the Drew Marshall Show. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, J.R., how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Sorry to put you on hold there for so long, but I don't know if you heard that story. Damn, man, that stuff messes with me.
I as a brand new father who has a 7-month-old, I can't even imagine just hearing that story. I mean, I'm with you, man. It just stop, man. As much as we know reality is the truth and we need to face it, it's just like, because my mind was going to another place, and I'm sure every father, every mother listening right now was thinking the same exact thing. But it's just horrible, and it's great. You know what? I applaud that man, though. I applaud him for what he's doing. You know, he's too often there's a lot of people in this country and in this world where we have a tendency to just kind of focus and dwell on the problem. And you know, I think the people that find ways to create a solution and educate people on the solution are just amazing people. So kudos to him and his organization.
Okay, so JR, listen, I've been looking forward to this interview because I want you to share what you've shared 1,000 times with our listeners. But I'm not looking forward from this point of view. You've shared this story. I mean, this is your deal. You share your story. This is your story. No one else's. You've shared it 1,000 million times. What is the downside of sharing the same story all the time? There's got to be. Does it become just mundane and blah 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 to you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what happens is you kind of lose the emotion, the pain with the story. I can tell your listeners my story no different than I'll tell you last night. I went to the store and picked up, you know, a Gatorade. I mean, you do it so much, it just becomes like second nature, like breathing. And you have to, when I pull aside to do my motivational speaking or a certain event or talking to somebody, I really have to dig down to that place and go back to that.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to just, it's like, okay, I'll tell you my story. I was driving a truck in Iraq in 2003 when my friend left Tyre under a bomb and I was burned 34% of my body. Spent almost 3 years in the hospital, you know, got out, had 33 surgeries, and this is what's happened, you know. And it's
nice.
And people are like, whoa, wait a minute, we're still processing, and you're on today, what are we going to have for lunch?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that's the downfall, and yes, it does get old. It has gotten old.
Yeah.
But you know what keeps me going, man, is honestly knowing and believing and seeing constant examples of the importance of me telling my story, because you know, I believe that every single one of us have the power to impact a life, positively or negatively. And I've seen through many examples that I've had an amazing opportunity to be able to help people in a positive way. That's why I continue to do it, and I pull from a certain place and the energy that I need to do it.
Man, folks, J.R. Martinez, and all the best. Thanks, J.R. That was great. All right, you know what? Let me do some summarization stuff here. First of all, this El Salvadorian mother that you have, this single mom, she's actually the hero in all this, don't you think? It's not you.
Yeah, it's not me, man. I mean, it's I'm the one that kind of, you know, was in the Humvee, has kind of become the person. But, you know, every person has a backbone, and every man has a backbone. And
it's usually a woman.
Behind every man is a great woman, and I'm blessed to have two of them, and starting with my mother. And, you know, my mother is an amazing woman. She's been through a lot in her life, but she's always found ways to persevere, to smile, to just fight and to stay strong and to believe. And you know what, man? I mean, I saw those examples as a kid, and even though they didn't necessarily make sense to me when I was a kid, once I got older, those small ways of her just living her life slowly became big lessons for me.
Yeah, totally. All right, so you graduate high school in May 2002, then you go for the football stuff, and they go, no, sorry, no football for you. And September 12th, 2002, you enlist. April 5th, 2003, Delta Company, 2nd Battalion, 502nd Infantry Regiment of the 101st Airborne Division. Front left tire.
You said that like professional. Yeah. You sound like you were in the military at one point.
And that was a cut and paste. front left tire goes off, right? You hit the IED. And then you guys got stuff inside the Humvee that goes off as well. Three other guys get thrown from the vehicle. You're trapped inside, pinned inside. You're watching your hands melt in front of you. They put you into like a three-week induced coma. The scour showers. Let's just jump to that for a second. I'm trying to summarize because I don't want to go through the whole thing, you know, again and again and again like you do. Like you just did on Ellen yesterday. 3 week induced coma and the scour showers. I heard you say the scour showers were worse than being melted by the fire.
Yeah, it was. And I know for people it's very hard to understand how that can even be possible. But here's pretty much what it is: the minutes that I was being burned alive, on the verge of losing my life. What happens is a lot of your nerves have a tendency to kind of go numb; they go into shock. And even though you do feel the pain, there's a lot of it that you still don't feel. And now you start kicking into a shock, to adrenaline. There's a lot of things going on. Well, when I was, when now you go through these showers and you're completely conscious now, even though they give you some medication, but you're aware now. Your body is somewhat kind of back past the shocking phase. But here's where the pain comes in. I'll ask everybody that's listening right now to kind of use your imagination a little bit. When we get out of the shower, when we're taking a shower, let's just say that, you know, we take a washcloth or something and rub it across our arm, for example. But what happens if you have a third-degree burn and where you're rubbing your arm, there's no skin there? Now you're talking about tissue, nerves. You're talking about directly getting to every single one of those things. And what they have to do, they actually have to clean that surface. I mean, and sometimes scrub, because they have to get the dead skin off for two reasons. One, because what normally takes a burn survivor's life is not necessarily the burn, it's the infection. And then two, it's because when the doctor decides to finally work on that area, he needs a clean surface. So can you imagine somebody really getting under your skin right now and essentially just rubbing back and forth? It is excruciating, the pain, and screaming and yelling.
Okay.
I mean, I can go, man. Yeah. That's a part that sometimes I keep out because, you know, we can only go so far when it comes to certain things like that. And especially, you know, depending if what time zone you're in, if you just had lunch, breakfast, you know, kind of keep it away. So.
Thanks.
But that's people come up to me all the time, and the biggest thing, and I wish there was a way, I haven't figured it out yet, but people come up to me all the time and ask me, man, what's it like? What does it feel like? And there's really nothing that I've ever experienced since that day that can even become remotely close. I mean, I've burned myself on the stove, which is kind of bad because when I burn myself now doing something, you know, I tell people, you know, oh, I'm burned, I got burned, you know, they think I'm being funny because that's how I am, and so it kind of is like a bad thing. So what happens when I really burn myself? How am I going to get people to believe me? Yeah. I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Man.
There's nothing that I've ever been through ever since that day that even comes close to feeling that type of pain.
Okay, JR, the bomb, whatever, goes off. Three other guys get thrown from it. You're the driver. You can't get out because it was the front left, so that obviously damaged the door, so you couldn't open the door. And you couldn't crawl out the window either. That was kind of the glass was still intact?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, Humvees, when we were over there, I mean, it was, you pack everything into your Humvees, and so you didn't have a lot of space even at all. Yeah. You didn't have any space at all. And so pretty much what happened, I just got pinned. And I just got pinned, and I just couldn't get out. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, the bomb going off right essentially under my feet. You know, steering wheel dash is kind of down on me. You know, it's I just couldn't get out at all.
And were the guys that were thrown, were they trying to get you out, or were they unconscious?
Well,
or
what? the guys that were thrown out of the vehicle, they were trying to just come to. They were trying to, you know, just trying to shake it off because, of course, now they have almost kind of a concussion symptom. And one of the guys actually finally came to, and he started to kind of help a little bit, but he was still out of it. The guys that ended up saving me were two completely different guys that were in different vehicles that had to maneuver and actually ended up getting burned themselves on their hands from reaching into the Humvee, the burning Humvee, and pulling me out of the vehicle.
You know, you're a funny guy. It's your guts, right? It's the spark you have that intrigues people. That's
that fire inside of me.
Yeah. That's horrible. But yeah. But the funniest thing, dude. When what the heck? I think it was when you're on Ellen. You said something about you know, people say, hey, you know, you ever imagine you get from you know, being blown up in Iraq to Hollywood, and you went, yeah, I've had 33 plastic surgeries. I deserve to be in Hollywood.
Exactly.
I thought that was hilarious.
I'm saying, listen, I'm not saying I should get the part. I'm just saying you should at least bring me in for a reading. Give me an audition. Give me an opportunity to be able to see if I can get the part. That's all I'm asking. Yeah. I mean, I've had more surgeries, plastic surgeries. I've had more facelifts than half of the ladies walking around here in Los Angeles, California right now.
Yeah.
I mean, how many men can say that?
Oh, well,
actually,
man.
In Los Angeles, California, a lot of men can say that.
Yeah, that's right. So, okay, so you get cast in All My Children 2008. You're playing, by the way, what is with these names they come up with? Brot. Who names their kid Brot? B-R-O-T.
I thought it was, honestly, when I joined the show, I thought it was just somebody kind of playing like a real mean joke, essentially trying to say bratwurst, you know, he's been cooked. You know, I felt it was horrible humor, and they were just trying to kind of be discreet about it by spelling it B-R-O-T, which, by the way, so not only was it a bad name, but then people that watched the show never, when they would see me in the street, would never get the name right. They thought it was Brock, B-R-O-C-K. They thought it was
Brett.
I've heard it all. I'm like, no, it's Brot.
Yeah,
Brot.
You see,
so now when I would go to work, I would overemphasize Brot, you know, just because I wanted it to come out on screen that people would hear, oh, wait a minute, Brot. But yeah, I don't know what's up with the character names, man. At least for me, it was probably the worst character name.
I'm just glad they didn't go with your initials, B-M. You know, that's not a cool thing at all. Okay, so you play an Iraq war veteran injured in combat. Were there any other guys that showed up for the audition that were scarred up like you?
Yeah, well, I met a couple of guys. And the couple of guys that I met that pretty much kind of made it to the very end weren't, you know, didn't have, they were more of amputees. Now, this is something I've learned early on after I was injured, that, you know, having scars on my face is an amazing tool. That's the way I look at it. And the reason why is because I can't hide this unless I'm going to wear a mask. And then if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have charges pressed against me, and I'm going to have to go through the process of declaring my innocence. And so this is a power, because we live in a visual world where we don't believe things. You know, we see something we're not used to seeing, man. We're like, whoa. We take a second to really kind of take it in and process it. And I always knew that when I was going for the part on All My Children, you know, I thought to myself, you know what? The great thing is, though, is that why they should pick me, and I would say this to my friends, is because I have the scars on my face. I would visually be able to really send the message to everybody at home, and that's what they want to do. If it's an amputee, no disrespect to them.
Yeah.
But camera-wise, when you look at it from that perspective, they're going to have to pan down, you know, so you can see their prosthetics. Because from the neck up, unless they have some facial, you know, scars or anything, you won't know.
Yeah, they don't have a leg to stand on. Is that bad?
I like that one. That was good.
Sorry.
That was
good.
And I looked at it as an advantage of mine. And there was over 600 people that applied for the role. And
wow.
Here I come trotting in. Hey, I've never done acting before. Can I try out? Can I get the part? And boom, I get it.
God's sense of humor, really, putting you in Hollywood. That's just, you know.
It's really been fun, you know. I mean, I never really thought I would be in Hollywood, you know, and here I am, you know, doing some cool things. And for me, it's just really cool, man, to be able to, you know, to be another person kind of breaking the barriers, breaking the walls down, and just saying, listen, you can be anything you can be, and you can still be in this industry.
The thing I want to know about the Dancing with the Stars deal, well, I got a few questions about this. First of all, how amazing is it to beat Ricky Lake and Rob Kardashian? I mean, and not just beat them, beat the snot out of them by millions of votes. Millions!
Well, it's funny because, I grew up, this obviously, we all know Ricky Lake is an older woman, but she's a very beautiful and was talented woman. But I grew up watching Ricky Lake, uh-huh. watching her show. So for me to actually beat her was like, hell yeah. it was like, cool. And then we all know what the Kardashian cult yep. is all about.
Yep.
And I was concerned. I was like, man, you know, he has those sisters of his that are going to pull in some votes and find ways to kind of get him to win. And when I beat him, I look at myself now. I have more fans and better fans and more educated fans and all this other stuff than the Kardashians. I went off. I mean, I was like, I beat Ricky Lake and the Kardashian
kid. Booyah!
I mean, that's pretty legit. But you know what, man? I don't know who's listening right now that actually watched Dancing and supported me or whatever. But you know, I just want to say, even though it was a year ago. Just thank you to everybody that voted for Karina and myself and just gave us an opportunity to do what we did week in and week out.
Just the fact that you got partnered with someone named Smirnoff, that works for me right there.
The joke always came in, Smirnoff?
No Smirnoff? Okay, two weird questions for you here about the Dancing with the Stars. First of all, I don't know how people don't just have ridiculous amount of affairs on that show, because when you're intimately dancing that close with someone that good looking, like those pro dancers, they is some hot specimens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they definitely are, man. But I think that's what it is. I think it's your 3 month. If you're on the whole time from the beginning to the very end, that's 3 months. That's 3 months you get to kind of, you know, just kind of explore, let's just say that, to where you're like, oh man, I get to dance with this lady, I get to dance with this girl, you know, whatever. And it's just 3 months, it's like a little pass where, you know, it's like, you know what, you're dancing, you're having a good time, and you'll never get that opportunity again, and your wife or your girlfriend or whoever will never give you an opportunity and understand that you're dancing with her for whatever reason. So it was just like, I mean, luckily, I will say this. Essentially what I'm saying is that at least from my season and from what I've heard ever since I really kind of became involved with the show, there's never been anything like that that's really happened. I mean, if people are single and people are kind of in between breakups or something like that, then yeah, maybe you'll see somebody kind of starting to hang out. But if you're in a relationship, it's like you get 3 months to dance with a beautiful man or a beautiful woman and enjoy it, because you're never going to have this again.
Well said. Okay, here's the question I'm nervous about asking. I don't get nervous, but I'm nervous about asking you this one.
Uh-huh.
No joke. Did you win Dancing with the Stars because of the pity vote?
You know, and that's not a bad question at all, because that was something that I was honestly concerned about when the show started. I didn't want people to vote for me because of pity. I didn't want people to vote for me because of what I had been through or what I had done. And I wanted people to vote for me for what the show was based on, was not only a personality, but at the same time, the ability to be able to dance and fully 100% entertain. And I worked really hard to make my routines the best that I can be. Now, I can't control why people decide to vote for me. I just hope, and I think when you look at dancing ability, I think I definitely, you know, I just know that I was definitely the better dancer of my season.
Yep.
You know, I was able to do it, and I just happen to have, you know, a personality and a story that go along with it. But I wanted to tell that story early on just so people can get to know me. Then I wanted to get away from it the rest of the season, and I did. You know, so people have said that to me, oh, you know, people just voted for you, you know, because of, you know, what you've been through, and they just have sympathy for you, or they have empathy, or they have pity for you. And I said, listen, I can't control why people vote for me.
Yeah.
I said, I can't control why people like something. I said, what I can control is to try to give you as much material as possible for you to make your own decision. And I, you know, when people tell me that, I've said to them, I said, you want to have a dance off right now? Then let's do this.
Throw down, baby.
And let's just see who can do the best quick step of their life.
Nice.
You know?
Nice.
And that'll prove it right there. So, I mean, and it's tough, you know, it's tough because, there's people that love Ricky, there's people that love Rob Kardashian, there's people that love, you know, Hope Solo, you know, the people that, the four finalists, you know, on my show, the season I was on, and that's fine, you know, but I caught some stuff, and I don't want to go on too much about this, but I pretty much got some heat, about a month ago from watching Dancing with the Stars, because I went on Twitter And I pretty much, somebody was voted off that was is a phenomenal dancer, and they shouldn't have went off. And I pretty much went on Twitter and said, this is the part of the show that I, you know, don't like, is when people that are amazing dancers and amazing entertainers go home early, and the people that, you know, could and should go home now get stick around.
Yeah.
And, of course, people are ripping me apart, man. Oh, you're so ungrateful. You know, if you don't remember, it was fan votes that got you there, and just going on and on. And it's like, no, people, it's not what I'm saying. I'm very appreciative. It's what I'm saying is that there's people that will vote for example, Kirstie Alley. You know, Kirstie Alley is 97, right? And, you know, there's people that voted for her because they felt there's a 97-year-old lady that's on a show representing us.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I get that, but you have to look at what the show is really about. It's about entertainment, and it's about dancing ability. And if they can't do that, then you wish them well, and you move on to the next week.
JR, hold on a second. JR, you mentioned Twitter, okay? And I got to say, did it not freak you out that the first tweet your daughter tweeted, the first word in that tweet was Chaz? What the heck is that about?
And that's so funny. And I was like, when I tweeted it, I was like, should I tweet this or should I not? Because I thought to myself, what? How the hell is she? And I think what happened was, this is what I think what happened, is damn autocorrect.
Yeah.
That's what it was. It was autocorrect because I've tweeted, you know, Chaz before, and I think that what it did is that she put something and they just thought maybe Chaz, and you put that. And you know, somebody else said that to me, and I was like, oh, man, I didn't even pay attention to that, you know, at the very moment, you know, which was funny.
All right. I had to throw that one out. Listen, I watched you speak at a high school one time, and you used this analogy in regards to the high school clock. You said the red hand is life, right? The red hand that's going around, that's just life.
Right.
And when it hits the highs in life, that's the 12 o'clock point, and the lows in life, that's the 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I want to know is, you know, you said what runs the clock is the batteries. What I want to know is, for J.R. Martinez, what do the batteries represent in your life? The batteries.
You know, batteries for me, you know, it's my mother. You know, the batteries for me, it's the opportunity and the ability to be able to help people and make a difference in their lives. That's the battery that kind of keeps it moving for me. And now, of course, you know, with my family, you know, having a 7-month-old daughter, that's the battery that kind of keeps me going, keeps me, you know, energized and motivated. And when I'm at a 6 point in my life, then knowing that those things are going to help get me through 6 and ultimately get back to 12 to the very top. And, you know, and honestly, man, I mean, in this industry, and when you become like a public figure, there's a lot of pressure, you know, to be what people came to know on whatever show that they came to know you on. And, you know, it's important for you to kind of take some time away from that and just focus on you being whoever you really are outside of that character. Because if you continuously try to give, and never receive to rejuvenate yourself, you go crazy. And I think that's what happens a lot in this industry that we all witness. And so it's important for me to just take time away from it to get back to being J.R. Martinez, whether it's just going hanging out with some friends and having a nice cold beer, watching a football game, and just, you know, or it's just being at home and just sitting here slouching on the couch doing nothing because I don't want to do anything and I can just be myself. Those are important things for me that kind of keep that red hand moving and get me from 6 to 12 again.
JR's book is called Full of Heart, My Story of Survival, Strength, and Spirit, which is now a New York Times bestseller. JR, what's your God thing? I mean, I know that, I don't know. I'm assuming that growing up with the mom you grew up with, there was maybe a bit of God stuff in her life?
Absolutely. You know, growing up for me, it was more about, you know, mom, what time are we, can we get home to watch football on Sunday? That was what was important for me. And it wasn't until I went through what I went through and was able to now, in the midst of me asking millions of questions, what was the point of this, what's going to happen of my life now, I started to see that there was going to be hope, that there was going to be opportunities for me to be able to come out on the other end. And things just really started to kind of line up, man. Things that were really confusing to me, whether it was when I was 9 years old or when I was 21 years old or 25 years old, all of a sudden, you know, through patience and just trying to stay positive and trying to do the right thing. I saw all these pieces come together, and the puzzle was kind of starting to be complete in a certain task. And I would think to myself, you know what, that's not me, man. That's a bigger power. And I started to slowly understand and believe. And now, of course, faith, God is a very, very big part.
Yeah, but JR, man,
JR,
you're living in the 30-mile zone, right? And people have redefined God in so many strange and unique and L.A. is just a breeding ground for redefining things the way you want to redefine things.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I don't know how you... I don't know where do you land with the God stuff? You are in the middle of the most pluralistic 30-mile zone in the world, and I'm not trying to lay anything on you. I've got my own struggles. I talk about it on the show a lot. There's not days. I've been living a few years now where I'm not even sure there is a God.
Right.
So you got no judgment for me. I'm just wondering, you know, how do you reconcile the God your mom kind of maybe laid on you when you're growing up or whatever, versus the God that you're experiencing these days?
You know, for me, it comes down to, man, I mean, it's, you know, if we don't see something or we can't touch something, we don't think it's real. We don't believe it. And I think that's kind of the issue that people have, like, when it comes to God, because then people think to themselves and they ask the question, well, why would he do something like this to me? Why would he supposed to be, you know, this great thing, and why did he put this pain on me? And for me, what it came down to, and this is obviously this may be my optimistic way of just kind of putting a twist on things, but for me, and I just look at it like, you know, as there is a God and his power, which is a great power, there also is a negative power. And it tries to control and get the best of you and pull every single one of us to another place. You know, but I believe that when that negative power tried to pull me, God essentially said, okay, you know what? Here is where we can go with this. And it's up to you to trust me. And if you trust me, this is where we'll end up, essentially, you know? And that's kind of the twist I put on for myself. And when it comes to being here in LA and people having their own beliefs, I don't allow what people here in this 30-mile zone, as you mentioned, you know, believe or how they tried to put a twist on things just so it can be molded to what works for them. For me, it's about, this is what's worked for me my whole life, not just the last, you know, year where people really have gotten to know me. This is what's worked for 29 years outside of the entertainment industry, and I'm not going to come into this entertainment industry to please you and change what I believe and change what I think. And it works for me, and it's always worked for me, and I think it will continue to work for me and my family and those around me. And everybody has their moments. I mean, it's everybody has their struggles, and you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. I just believe that there is a greater power, and there is purpose, and I think that the reason why sometimes people find themselves on the side of the road stuck in the mud is because we focus on what we want. We want when we want it. We want with who we want it to be with. And instead, sometimes you just got to trust the path that's laid out before you and trust that higher power and just go with it. And then before you know it, you start seeing your tires catching traction and you start moving versus sitting in the same spot, spinning out.
I would love to talk with you about Dad not being in your life. Right, the
whole
right. I mean, that's I left the most intriguing thing to the end, and now we don't have time for it. So I'm an idiot. But aside from that, there is a verse in the Bible that says, "I will be a father to the fatherless." God talking that way, and you know, if anybody has a reason to say, "I'm not into this God stuff," because you keep talking about him like father, and tell you what, my father wasn't a father, so I'm kind of confused with this whole father imagery thing.
Right.
There's that. But then there's, if anybody needs to reach out, I think has maybe an innate desire to reach out more than even the rest of us, it's those whose fathers haven't stepped up.
Right.
So that's a weird anomaly there for you. But listen, JR, man, thanks for doing what you do, for spilling your guts, for writing this book, Full of Heart, My Story of Survival, Strength and Spirit. Again, New York Times bestseller, killer book.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You you take care of yourself and your baby and your woman.
I definitely will, man. Thank you for the time. I really, really enjoy talking to you, man. Just thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, JR. Take care, man.
Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye. JR Martinez on the Drew Marshall Show. Wow, we're moving from one inspirational story to the next. Nick Walenda, acrobat, aerialist, daredevil, high wire artist, multiple Guinness World Record holder, the guy who walked across Niagara Falls. Up next, stay with us.
Putting the asthmatic in charismatic, you're listening to Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show.